Youngstown, Ohio. What's up, champ?
What's going on, man?
All right, so Kelly, here's what we're going to start now. And we have a connection together, but here's what it is. It's my sister-in-law's brother-in-law. For the past 7 years, he's like, bro, I know Kelly Pavlik. I'm like, all right, well, get him on my podcast. I don't know him like that. I don't have his number. I'm like, bro, just hit him up if you know him that well. He's like, bro, I'm telling you, I know him, I know him. So he came on for a few minutes. Let me see if you know him, okay? He's my sister-in-law's brother-in-law, but I see him all the time. You ready?
Yeah.
I'm going to put up his ugly face. Let's see if you know this dude, okay? Here we go. Do you have any idea who that is? His video's on
him? Yeah. What's up, man?
What's up, brother?
Yeah, I came up.
Will Rosinski. He said he's the man who retired you.
No, I don't say that, man.
Yeah, holy fuck. No, actually, you know what? Well, it could be. It's a possibility.
I never said that.
Well, it was the last fight. It was the last fight I had. So,
how you been,
that's
man?
Fucking crazy, dude, man. How you doing?
Good, good, good. How you been?
Right. I've been busy as hell, dude. Just here and out my gym parking lot. I had to do this interview from the phone because I have like three clients, and then I'm all over, man. I'm promoting national bands and comedians and all kinds of shit. So the charitable organization is going good. So staying active.
Nice, nice, man. Busy's good, man. Busy's good.
That's it. Yep, how you been?
So, Kyle, I want to ask you guys about your fight together, and then we'll all podcast together. Because it was such a weird thing for me when I first met Will. He's like, yeah, I was a boxer. I'm like, oh, great. I threw a Wikipedia. I'm like, holy shit, bro, you fought some big names. You fought Kelly Pavlik. He's like, yeah. How did that fight come along for you, Will? Because didn't you fight, and it was like 3 weeks later you fought Kelly? So how did that whole thing happen?
Yeah, I was. I had just fought Aaron Pryor Jr., and the next day my manager called me. He said, listen, a fight came up. A fight fell through. I'm not sure even who it was. I think it was the guy in Kelly's camp, hurt his rib or something. I don't know. They said they want you to fight Kelly Pavlik in 3 weeks. And I was like, So, you know, he gave me a number and I was like, yeah, I want more money. Obviously, they're desperate. So I'm trying to get more money. Didn't work well because I wasn't a name, obviously. And I said, yeah, I mean, I fought Aaron Pryor to a 10-round decision. I had no, you know, I had no bruising. No, I was fine. I won the fight. It wasn't like, you know, sometimes you win some fights, you get a little beat up or something. But I was good. I was, yeah, I'd be ready to go. I'm in shape already. I hit 168 yesterday, you know, 2 days ago. So I'm good to go. I'll make sure I stay in shape. Rest is history. I mean.
And then Kelly, with you, Kelly, fighting on the level. And then how do you find out about Will? Like this guy, Will Rosinski, guy from Queens, wants to fight me. And what made you agree to it? Because it seemed like it was not really a match made in heaven. How'd that come about for you?
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly how all that transpired, you know, especially because I went out to Robert Garcia and I had the first fight. I was out there for about 5 months and first time leaving home and going, you know, with the new trainer and everything. And so I had a fight with a guy by the name of Aaron Jaco. And then I had about 2 months in between that and I fought another fight. And I think like it's kind of the same with Will. They turned me back around in a month and a half later, and I fought Will, you know, after my second fight out there with Garcia. So, and then, you know, for me, it was just like, hey, you know, okay, you're fighting, I think it was July of 2012. They're like, you're fighting in July. And I was like, all right, you know, like, let's go. And because I was hoping, you know, to eventually at that point, that was like the second go at the career, you know, and line for a title fight. And there was already talks after I fought Sigmund that I was supposed to be hopefully getting either a mandatory shot or a title fight. And, you know, they said Will, and I was, okay, all right, good fight. And I kind of remember Will from the amateurs, and I believe it was Syracuse, New York. I fought in the National Golden Gloves. I think he was a weight class higher than me. But when they put up, you know, they told me I was fighting Will, I was just like, all right, you know what I mean? It was just another thing that you had to go through and a fight. And, you know, I watched, I think it was such short notice, but I maybe one or two video clips of Will, you know, as film breakdown. And that was it. That's how it kind of came about. I mean, you know, it was just at that point, go fight, you know, whoever they put me in with is who I was going to fight.
Do either of you guys, I just looked it up, do you guys remember the odds on the fight? Or you guys don't even check that?
I'm sure I was a very big odds.
Kelly, you remember?
I think I do know that, actually.
What is it?
I think I was like, if he was like a 5-1 favorite.
Yeah, 6-1. Good job, Will.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah.
Kelly, if Will would have hit you up to come on my podcast 5 years ago, would you have came on?
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks a lot, Will.
Absolutely.
Well, I do have your
number. I think I seen Will. What was that? I seen Will at the I was covering a fight.
The Barkley.
I had my podcast. Yeah, the Barkley. I seen you out there. That was probably about, 5-6 years ago now.
Something like that, yep.
Yep.
Kelly, he just doesn't go through. All right, so now that we got the Will part on, Will, you want to stay on as we podcast?
Yeah, I can stay on for a little bit. That's fine. I'm cool with that.
Champ, I got to ask you a question. Does it ever get old to be called champ? Because whenever I have boxes on, they still love it. Do you still love being called champ?
Yeah, you kind of get used to it, I guess. You know what I mean? Yeah, it's cool, I guess, right? Never really looked into it like that, but yeah.
Youngstown, Ohio. I'm fascinated by it. Boom Booms came on before. A bunch of other people. We're going to get to that in a second. When you're traveling the country, you're in Barclays, you're fighting all over. What's one food from Ohio that you miss, that you want to get back home, like I need to eat? Like I'm away, I need pizza or a bagel when I get back to New York. What about you? What's one food you want?
I'm not big. So I got my grandmother, I was close with that. My family was pretty small on both sides. But my grandmother was a Sicilian lady, and you know, of course, in Youngstown, it was an old Italian area. It was huge with Italians, and mm-hmm. and so pasta is huge. Okay, like the Sunday, it's pasta and meatballs, right? And I would probably miss that. You know, pizza. We are known for our pizza here too. We're kind of like in between the Chicago and New York style too, and pizza is good here. But when you start talking about like New York style pizza, there is, in my opinion, you know, a lot of people get mad at me in Youngstown. I'm like, there's no pizza like New York. But pasta, yeah, man, that's one that I would say for sure. And mainly homemade.
Youngstown sits between like Cleveland and Pittsburgh. You a Steelers guy or a Browns guy?
I'm a Browns guy.
Oof, that's a
and rough I still don't know. Line, I know. Listen, I don't like saying that out in public too often. You're lucky that I even mentioned it. but yeah, you know, and it's weird too, because if you, like, I'm literally 8 minutes from the PA line, right? And if you go over to PA line, you won't see one Cleveland Browns jersey. But right here where we are in Ohio, mm-hmm. you probably see more Steelers, you know, uniforms than you do Cleveland Browns.
That's wild. Listen, we're going to talk about your crazy career from starting at 11 to ending with Will, everything between. But now, what are you doing now with this gym, with your charity? Because I went on my wife's Instagram. That's how I got in touch with you, because Will wouldn't text you. The gym looks great. What kind of charity are you doing with the kids, and what are you doing with all this stuff?
So I have, like, the gym I'm at right now is in Clump, right outside of Youngstown. And this is a for-profit gym. It's a fitness gym. And I have about 400 members in a small little area, which is doing great. But out of the back, I do strength conditioning. I've always been a huge fan of strength conditioning. I've always been, you know, somewhat of a student of the game. And I observed and paid attention and learned from all the strength conditioning coaches I've had. I love it. I think it's everything in sports. I think no matter what, and especially boxing, right? You know, in boxing, if somebody's faster than you, you could do certain things in training to kind of cut the edge that they have. If you're also in great shape, you can kind of outwork somebody. There's just always something that, you know, you can go through X's and O's and work on your boxing or your football. But if you can't execute it because you're out of shape or you get tired, you know, so there's just so many things. Anyways, with that being said, I have more of like a weightlifting, CrossFit, it's almost everything in one. You know, I also did powerlifting after I retired. So just a lot of heavy lifting here too. But out of this same gym, I do strength conditioning with the kids, you know, from 4th through 12th grade, and it's free for them. And then at my boxing gym, it's free to the kids, you know, 4th through 12th grade as well. So none of the kids that are boxing pay to come there. And then I'm also working on right now, I'm teaming up with PsyCare, which is a counseling service. And I'm going to be having counseling services for the kids. We're also working on tutoring, you know, working with some of the local colleges like YSU mm-hmm. to see if we get interns, you know, to come in and do some tutoring. And then we're also working on a after-school meal program as well.
You're doing a lot. Is it difficult to have a like you said, from 10 kids to 400 kids. Is it difficult to spread yourself? Do you spread yourself too thin? Like, who's training these kids? Do you have a lot of helpers there? Is that difficult?
Yeah, I think my wife, so like I'm doing the, also, you know, I'm into promote, I got like right now, next month, I have Red Jumpsuit Apparatus, Tantric. You know, I'm doing a concert show with them. I had all the guys from Kill Tony.
Oh, shit.
Tony Hinchcliffe is a Youngstown guy, too.
Of course. Everybody's from Youngstown.
But I had like Jacob Barr, Enrique Jacone, and you know, them guys. So I'm promoting that. And she was, and I go, I think I want to get the podcast going again. She's like, if you add one more thing, I'm going to shank you. So I'm like, I'm not doing nothing else, you know? But yeah, I am spread thin. I'm still able to fit, like my son is going into his junior year. I still got time to work with him on the strength conditioning, you know, and trying to get him ready, you know, but it's also 9 a.m. till 9 p.m. is go, you know.
Hey, Kelly, is he into boxing, your son?
No, I don't want him boxing, man. No. He's football, you know, he did a little bit of wrestling. I did let him spar one time, you know, just see what it's like to get hit to learn a little bit, right? You know, I mean, he's a tough kid, but he's still, you know, there's that little test factor of like what happens if he ever needed, you know, self-defense and somebody hits him, right? How's he going to react? And that's the big thing. So I let him spar once or twice. And other than that, he never really had a liking for it. I mean, he wanted to kind of do it, and I wasn't going to push him at all. You know what I mean? So I was fortunate on that.
Will, you have like 20 kids. Would you let any of your kids box or no?
No, I feel the same way. It's weird. I want him to box because for the self-defense aspect of it. Because I feel like when you train every day, especially keep them straight. Like when I was training every day, if I'm at a place and a fight breaks out, I don't want to fight, man. I just fought for the last 3 hours. I have nothing to prove. Cause that's just an issue, right? Guys have something to prove. They want to prove something to somebody, their friend, themselves, whatever. Yeah. So I want my kids to get into it for that reason, so they have the confidence to be like, listen, if I had to, I could, you know, the regular guy there, I could one to him and it'll be over, you know. But at the same time, I don't want too much into it where they're getting their heads beat in every day. It's a tough sport, man. Like, 'cause even when you win, you're losing. You know what I mean? Like, even when you win, you're going home, you have no marks. You still get your brains, you know, splattered in a little bit. And the money's good, but is it worth it? You know, I didn't make money. Like, obviously, like Kelly, he's much more well into his advanced in his career than I did. But even that, like, hey, you know, is it really worth it at the end of the day? Like, I'm happy I can say full
stop. Exactly, you're 100% correct. I mean, it's like, what good is the money if you can't fucking count it, you know? A lot of people ask me all the time, like, you retired at 30 years old, young, you know? It's like, dude, if I could have retired after going to these Hall of Fame ceremonies and seeing the shit that I see, if I could have retired 2 years earlier, you know what I mean, I would have. But no, that's a good point, you know? Even like with the people would always say, well, how about, you know, they come up to me, what if you got in a street fight and like, oh, if you want to fight, if you got in a fight with this guy, and I'm going, dude, that's like asking a construction worker when he gets off work, like, hey, can you go to my house and put a fucking roof on, right? Or like if somebody came up to a construction worker, like, you know, people who don't want to talk boxing with me, right? And I'd be like, hey, what if I came up to you after 12 hours of working on a house and be like, just talk to you about like the cost of nails and hammers and, you know what I mean, and about this job. Like, after I'm done at the gym, I don't want to fucking think about fighting. I'm like the biggest wuss that you'll ever meet, dude. Like, you can call me names. You can tell me I smell like shit. You can tell, you can, you know, push me. I'm probably not going to fight you. You know what I mean? Like, that's the last thing that I want to do. But when it comes to your kids, yeah, exactly. You're 100% correct. And when it comes to my son, I know, like you said, I kind of want to get him the experience of fighting. A big thing in boxing, too. Like, I could teach anybody. I think anybody who starts boxing and they do 2 months is the most dangerous point for them, because I think they'll get their ass whipped quicker because they're trying to figure out, like, how to use the punches, what they learned. The big part about boxing, what separates it from a lot of other martial arts, is when you do start sparring, the full go, it's like a real fight. You're getting hit with real punches. That's when you start really learning how to fight, and it becomes self-defense, because after a handful of times of sparring, you're used to getting hit. Your brain knows how to react to it. If you get in a street fight, you know how to handle yourself a lot better. Everything kind of slows down a little bit more.
Will mentioned all the money you made. What's the dumbest purchase you ever made?
Oh, shit.
That you look back and you're like, how the fuck did I spend blank on what?
All right. So I was always like, I was really good. My father helped me. The reason why I'm able to do the shit that I do now and have my own times and businesses and gyms and all that was because I was fortunate. Like after I won the world title, and they put it in the paper, my local paper, the amount that I made, and I walked into and like 2 weeks before the Jermaine Taylor fight, I was shopping at Walmart, and then like 2 days after the Jermaine title fight, I was walking into Walmart, and it was a big difference, right? Everybody's like, "What the fuck are you doing here?" I'm like, "Shopping, dude." So I always wore gym clothes. I never had, but I did go buy a 40-foot RV. And not only did I buy that 40-foot RV, I like gutted it, dude, and turned it into like a party bus. You know what I mean? We called it like the Barbie. And I put like TVs all through it, and I still got it for a hell of a deal. Don't get me wrong; it wasn't like I spent like $300,000 on it or anything. And but I put a lot into it. And to this day, I think it was the dumbest purchase that I've. I wouldn't even say that it was the dumbest purchase. I think what I put into it was the dumbest thing. You know what I mean?
I mean, all right, that makes a lot of sense. You mentioned the money being in the Youngstown newspaper. What is it about Youngstown? Very rarely are there small places. You hear Chicago, New York, or a guy comes from Nashville, Miami, to have you, Boom Boom Mancini. I think Maurice Claret, Bernie Kosar, a lot of heavy hitters, Tony Hinchcliffe are from Youngstown. What is it that breeds the athlete fighter from there?
I don't know. Actually, we just had a big ceremony because Youngstown put out 5 world champions, born and raised. You know what I mean? I want to say per capita, nobody has done that. Nobody's had more than Youngstown. Like, take your big cities, Philadelphia, Detroit. How many were really born and raised, though, from, you know, like Michigan, Kronk, right? How many people went there from, you know, California or Florida? You know, Youngstown, born and raised, we had Mancini, Harry Arroyo, Jeff Lampkin, Greg Richardson, and they were all world champions, you know? From a town that has, like, right now we are 40,000 and less, you know, population-wise. So I don't think there is one. And then football, you ready for this? 2 years ago, we ranked number one per capita and players put into the NFL. Not just college D1, but into the NFL. And it was all Northeast Ohio. Like, Akron was number 2. Cleveland was, like, 4. Youngstown was number 1. Canton might even been in there.
Oof.
So, yeah, I don't know, man. It's I don't know if it's just a hard, rough area. I don't know if it's the weather, you know, getting the worst of cold, hot, and humid. And I don't know what it is, man. It's crazy, though. It really is when you sit back and think about it.
Yeah, per capita, that's pretty wild. Take me back, a young Kelly Pavlik, playing any other sports? I know you famously went to the gym at 9, 10, 11 years old. Any other sports growing up that really caught your attention? And what was it about boxing that you like, this is it, I want to fight?
Yeah, I played football until I was about 12, you know, little league, peewees, and it was good football player. Baseball, I played till I was about 18, but baseball, I loved it, but it was just a sport where I didn't have enough time to put into it. Like, when kids were playing high school baseball, I was when all the tournaments were coming. So then I would go play fall ball, travel, which was like all your top players from high school. So I was already kind of behind a little bit going in. And then actually, I never forget, my agent, Cameron Duncan, called me in 2000. He found out that I was playing baseball. I don't know how, but he was like, that's it, no more. So I stopped. And those are I love playing those sports. And then boxing was, to be honest with you, I started off, I came up, I fought a kid, my first amateur fight. I was 11 years old. He had like 42 amateur fights. He was the Ohio State Fair champion. And I literally went in there and whooped his ass. My second fight, we fought a kid that was like 12 pounds, 13 pounds heavier. I stopped him in the second round. And then I ran into a kid in Cleveland, my third fight. And that was my first loss. The kid, if he was a bunch of JOs, he could fight. The Cleveland amateur scene still to this day is huge. And I beat it, or I lost to him. And then I was still active in football and all the other sports. I would say probably about 16 years old, I kind of started getting serious with boxing, and I really started doing a lot of fights. And I went in and I won the junior national Golden Gloves. And then a couple months later, I won the national junior PAL. And I think that was when I really realized, like, holy shit, this is, if I stay with it, it's real, And I did. But even after that, I got into the open division. I lost in the first round of the national Golden Gloves to James Webb. And then I lost another one. I fought in four total. And then I ended up going to the under 19s and I won that. And then I went and beat Darnell Wilson in the US Championships, who was going for his fifth straight national title. And I whooped him. I beat him like 33 to 12. And that was it right there. Now I started having people call me. Cameron Duncan started calling, wanting me to talk with Top Rank.
But
I had
Kelly,
Lou Duva.
before Top Rank, any Olympic dreams? Did you want to go the Olympic route, or I don't even know if that was possible, or you wanted to go right the
Oh,
pro
I
route?
think so. Yeah. So there's so much. I'm trying to, like, get through it quickly. Yeah. Olympics was huge. It was a big
Yeah.
part. I qualified. I was one of the youngest kids in the Olympic trials. I qualified for the Olympic trials through the US Championships.
Okay.
And me and Stephen Leveno and Nonito Donaire were the three youngest kids in the Olympic trials. You know what I mean? I was 17. And that was it. And I didn't have a lot of time in the open division. Like, I don't even think I was in the open division a full year and I turned pro.
Oh, wow.
So I always think about that. If I would have stuck around another 4 years, yeah, I don't see anybody obviously beat me. I
Yeah.
think I would have went straight to the Olympics. But then again, maybe I didn't sign. Who knows on that?
I'm glad you mentioned starting pro early because you fought in 2000. It was like June, September, October, November, December. Then 2001, it was February, March, August, November. You had like 10 fights in like 14 months. Was that the blueprint to start, or it just happened that way? Did you go in there like, I want to get X amount of fights, as much ring time as possible?
No, at that point, it was pretty common at that point with up-and-coming fighters, to keep them busy. I mean, you're only fighting 4 rounds. It really ain't much different than the amateur, aside from, getting nicked up a little bit more because of no headgear. But, they just kept me busy, and if I was healthy, we fought. Now, a couple times there were some fights where, or sometimes where I had to take a couple months off. I'm sorry, I'm getting a call in.
Worries.
And, but that was because of, like, I may have had a hand injury, or I may have, a little bruise on a knuckle. So it would take a month off. But yeah, it was kind of common at that time to have the fights, you know what I mean, to stay busy and active. And also, it's more of a marketing thing for the promoters too, right? Like, I think I was 10 fights or 11 fights into my career before I fought back home. They want to put you, when you sign with a big promotion, like, I fought a lot on De La Hoya's undercards. I was on De La Hoya versus Vargas. They fought me in Concho, Oklahoma, trying to get eyes on you, trying to build a fan base and things like that. So that's a big part. And I can understand that, is from a promoter, a promotional company standpoint, trying to market their fighter and get out there.
Speaking of marketing you were 30-0, you have like this rocket to the top. Who gave you the ghost nickname? How'd that come about?
That was all a coincidence, man, and a lot of people wouldn't believe it. So I'm the youngest of three kids. I brought three boys, and I think there was a tournament in Cleveland, and I was like the only white kid in that tournament, right? And Cleveland has some bad fighters to this day. And believe it or not, I used to be a very slick boxer in the amateurs, and even early on in my pro career. But the kids in Cleveland started calling me Ghost. And we had a fight. And this goes all the way back to, like, the camcorder VHS days. And I think it was 98. And I was in there and I was beating the kid. And all the kids from Cleveland were calling me Ghost because of, being a white guy. And my brother didn't go to that fight. And we got home and my dad videoed it and showed him the videotape. And you couldn't hear the kids screaming. It just sounded like a lot of ruckus. And he was watching me, and I made the kid miss with a couple punches, and I would, like, slide behind him, tap him on the ass, and push him off. And my brother was like, "Damn," he's like, "you move like a ghost in there."
No
And it was
shit.
kind of like, yeah. And nobody had that nickname, and it was a coincidence. And from there, man, we just kept it.
And then how do you start marketing? Like, you just start saying, oh, when you announce me, call me the Ghost?
Yeah, it was like I got this horrible, horrible, childish little ghost that we found. Now, you're going back 1998, too, so it was harder to find. I'm not an artist. Nobody in my family is an artist. And it was harder. You just couldn't go on the internet and find, you know. So, yeah, we had this like, oh, God. Actually, my dad last night, they're doing this documentary, and we had to get these pictures. And then in my picture book, there was the first original ghost, and I was like, oh, God, I can't believe I put this on my trunks. yeah, we just started calling me Kelly the Ghost Pavlik.
You're 30 now, and everyone talks about the Jermaine Taylor fight. I want to talk about it. But the fight before that was Edison Miranda, and he threw haymakers. I remember not being that into boxing, but knowing this guy just would kill people. Going into a fight like that, and Will, you too, because obviously I'm not a fighter. I know both of you guys see me, and you're like, oh, this guy must throw down all the time. I look like a fighter. When you fight a guy that strong, mentally, does that change your approach? Because he was known to just throw absolute just monster jabs, monster hits. Is that going in there? I know no one could say they're scared, but does that change your outlook fighting that way?
Yeah, it's all about a mental game at that point, you know, and especially from my standpoint, being that I was a power puncher, knockout, you know, guy. Yeah, listen, people totally forget, and it's funny, like people talk about like Triple G's power. Mm-hmm. I can honestly tell you right now, Miranda, Triple G, I don't see any difference. I bet you Miranda probably hit harder than Triple G.
He was the boogeyman of boxing. What he did to Ellen Green, what he did to Arthur Abraham, it was just one of those things where it's, you know, going in, I watched a lot of film. And when people would let Edison Miranda throw punches and set up, he was dangerous, right? Like, even for a boxer to go in there, he would probably have caught them because of the way he threw his punch. He was unorthodox, you know? So the game plan was, and this is fucked up. This is a messed up game plan. I'm sorry if I'm swearing. Are we allowed?
No, you're allowed. Yeah, of course.
Okay. And you can even ask Will, like, going in against a guy who is a power puncher, brutal puncher, and you're going to say, you know what? I'm putting my bulletproof vest on. My game plan is I'm walking him back, right? I'm not dodging. I'm not slipping. I'm pushing this guy backwards, and he's got to feel my power. You know, you screw his power. He's got to see if he can deal with my power. And that was the game plan. Now, most people would be like, I'm not getting hit by that son of a bitch. I'm going to move. I'm going to move my head. And the hype got to me, too, until the first round when he actually hit me with a jab, and I was like, this is real. This fucker hit hard. His jab, I carried that jab for like 5 rounds. Oof. But, yeah, like that's the game plan. Like, you know you're going to get hit by this brutal puncher. And that was my whole game plan, but it worked. You know, I pushed him back. I put him on his back leg, and he couldn't set up and throw the looping punches. But, yeah, it was – I tell you, man, it sucked, because what was even worse about it was Zartucci, the fight before that. Mm-hmm. That was supposed to be a number one mandatory. They put the medal around my neck. After Zartucci, I was supposed to fight Jermaine Taylor. And next thing you know, like 3 weeks go by, and I'm waiting for the phone call from my agent, Cameron, that I'm getting a title shot. And he goes, Cal? I'm like, yeah, Cam? He goes, I got good news and bad news. And I'm like, what? He goes, well, the good news is you got one more fight, and then you definitely have a title shot. The bad news is you got to fight Edison Miranda. I'm like, oh, dude, are you fist-fucking me on this one? Come on, like... What do you mean I got to fight Edison Miranda? I just fought Zartucci. High risk, low reward, right? I'm not saying anything about it, but a lot of people would have took that Zartucci fight at my level, right, where I was at. Zartucci was a dangerous type fighter. It made you look bad. He hit hard. And I beat him. I knocked him out. I thought I had the title shot. Now you're telling me I got to go fight Miranda, who just came off, like I said, the Abraham and the who was it? Alan Green. And Alan Green at the time was legit. You know, he could fight.
Will, what about you, Will? Same question. You're going in there knowing a heavy hitter. Yeah.
So here's the difference with myself and him is that he came – he's right. I mean, you go in and fight a guy that can punch. Yeah, you don't want to get hit. Your plan is to not get hit. The thing with him, with Kelly, is that he had the power and the confidence in his power that, you know what, I'm going to put this fucking guy on his back foot, and I'm gonna use what he has, and I'm going to not let him set up and hit me. The problem with me is, like, going into fight Kelly Pavlik is I don't have that same power, and I knew that. I mean, listen, I got to be honest with myself. I'm not a big, heavy-handed puncher that's knocking guys through the ropes and you know, putting them on stretches. I'm not that guy. So I had to come up with a game plan to fight a guy, Kelly Pavlik, because I know he punches like a mule, you know? And he's right. That was my game plan. Try to not get hit, which worked against me because – and there's a couple aspects here. I mean, it's the mental aspect. I mean, I'm fighting Kelly Pavlik, who I watched on TV for the first couple of years of, you know, when I just first turned pro and – almost idolized him, and I respect him. This is one of my favorite fighters, and now I have to fight him. So that's a whole mental game that a lot of guys don't realize that a guy like me had to go through. And now I know he's a big puncher, and I'm not a big puncher. I can't leave him on his back foot. My only little bit of confidence, well, not confidence, was I'm like, he's coming up to 168, and he's a bigger puncher at 160. And I thought, you know, maybe he's not going to be punching as heavy at 168 as he's at 160. I wasn't exactly right, because he could still punch, obviously, but that was my little bit of in my head, my little bit of confidence going into that fight. But that was my plan. Listen, try to hit, not get hit. And at that point, I think I had too much respect. I gave Pavlik, you know, too much respect. And then I didn't fight my game plan as much as I should have. You know what I mean?
That's interesting. It's cool because I remember watching something on Miranda and it said that it's like, you know, they always said when Mickey Mantle's in the box or Maguire, you can be looking away and you would just hear the monster hit, like, oh, this is someone special. They always said when Miranda was hitting the bag, you're like, who's this guy? Is he hitting the bag with a baseball bat? That's why I always heard that stuff about him, how hard he hit.
Yeah, it is true, dude. Like, he hit me, like I said, with a jab. And, you know, yeah, obviously, you know, going in, even once you're experienced and you've been there and done it, you know, it's just weird, like, you know, the way the brain works, like, Yeah. He hits hard. I know he's a power puncher until you get in there and then he hits you and it's like, holy shit. Like, you know, he hits you on the shoulder and you go, fuck, like, damn it. You know, yeah, he hits hard, dude. And, but you got to stick with the game plan. You know what I mean? Like, that's just what it is. And yeah, but he was a brutal, brutal puncher.
Okay, let's fast forward 4 months later, Atlantic City. How early do you get to AC for the fight? Are you there a week early, a few days early to fight the
division? I always got out about 2 days early. So,
and you're just chilling in the hotel room, not wanting to be seen. Give me the couple days before the big fight.
So yeah, it's you know, you go in, you got two fights. You know what I mean? For most of my career, you know, people don't realize that either. Like, I was almost I was over a decade at 160. You know what I mean? So it was a lot to stay at that weight. You know, usually once you start getting to 26, 27, 28 years old, your body naturally wants to go. So, you know, obviously the skill and making sure our weight was right was a big part of that when you got there. Of course, you know, at that point too, it's far different from early on in your career. Like, when you get there, you got media at least 4 or 5 times throughout the day. You got to go to the media room and do interviews and talk with the HBO commentators, Showtime commentators. You got to sit down with everybody. And then you got to find a time in between to put a tiny little bit of food in your belly and then go work it off. You know what I mean? And yeah, so you're kind of miserable. Your nerves are high. Your adrenaline's pumping. Yeah, so there's just a whole bunch that goes into it at that level. You know, parts that I don't really miss, you know. And yeah, that was it. That was what pretty much. Hey, you got to be here. You got to sign these gloves. Hey, you got to go talk to Lampley. Hey, you got to go here, do this. Oh, shit. Okay, well, when am I going to be able to get to the spa, to hop in a sauna, you know, or do this? Yeah, we were going to go eat real quick. That's what it is pretty much leading up to the fight.
Seventh round TKO. You finish.
I'm sorry, but then I'll finish. And then, like, what we did, so Friday morning would be weigh-in. You make weight. We would go eat big meals. I did. You know, a lot of people say like to go in and eat small and build their way up. And then I would always go to a movie the night before a fight. You know, it was more of a superstitious thing. I would go see a movie, a comedy, too. I didn't want anything serious. I want to kind of laugh and break up the monotony of being serious and, you know, ready. Yeah, that was it, though. That was kind of what went on, you know, before fights.
Now, TKO in seventh round, you run across the ring, your hands go in the air. Mentally, are you grasping what you just did, or are you still in the boxing zone? Like, did you realize I'm the fucking world champion? Or are you still in fight mode? What just happened?
Yeah, you don't know shit. I didn't. I knew I won. I knew I was a world champion, right? But you don't realize. And I'm going to be dead honest with you. You don't realize. I actually really didn't let it sink in until I retired. You know, like, what you just accomplished. You know what I mean? The meaning to it. Like, yeah, you know you're a champion, right? You know, of course, like, after I won and they sent me my belts, you know, I walked past the trophy case and you would see them almost every day. And you're like, yeah, those are mine, right? And people call you champ and you go, yeah, I know, I'm a champ, right? But you really don't realize like what you just did until smoke settles and all the craziness is done and gone, to where you can sit back and be like, holy shit, you know, what a road it was to get there, you know, what I did, who I beat, who he beat, you know what I mean? And just the whole thing, like how it just all comes about and all the little things that happened. You don't realize until well after. At least I didn't until well after.
Now, you could have won the title in some shitty-ass places. You won it in Atlantic City, which is a good party place. How do you celebrate that night?
Yeah, shit. If somebody fought a 12-round fight like that one, or even a 7-round fight like that one, and they were able to party, I don't know how to fuck. Like, I don't lie to you. Like, for the most part, I would, you know, have some a little bit of fun after the fight. I mean, I'm not going to lie about that, right? But that night, dude, like, okay, so we had the post-fight conference. Mm-hmm. First time I ever pissed blood.
You know what I mean? Like, because it was like, and it became a common thing after, you know, like the 12-round fight with Taylor. You know, I was sitting there pissing, and I'm like scratching my head looking at the bottle. It looked like Hawaiian Punch. I look at the doctor. And I'm like, is this shit normal? Am I, like, dying?
Yeah.
And he started laughing. He's like, yeah. He goes, for those type of fights, man, he's like, yeah. And after that first piss, you know, your color started coming back to normal. But my stomach, you know, my nose, I had like broken nasal cavity, so I kept having snot come out. And I had to go to an after party where all the fans from Youngstown were there to, you know, invite or receive me. And it was just hard, man. It was like I didn't want to be there. I was tired. And then, yeah, of course, you had your whole team after that. So now by this time, it's like 2:00 in the morning. My flight's at 7:30 in the morning.
Ooh.
Home, and everybody's in my room, right? And I'm always the person that don't want to hurt feelings. So, like, most people that came in, but like, get the hell out of here. It's bedtime, right? But I was there, and I go lie. I tried having a beer, and I couldn't get it down, dude. It was just like broken glass, my stomach. So I just sipped on some water, and then I couldn't wait. Like, each person would walk out the room and be like, all right, man, get out, go. And I literally got like 2 hours of sleep, flew home, and then I slept that almost that entire day.
See, Kelly, that's so disappointing, because I always wanted – obviously, you just fought a war. I always wanted to win a title at the Garden, walk down Broadway, the belt around my thing, no shirt on. That's all I dream about. And when I talk to boxers who won the championship, they're like – yeah, bro, no, that night I couldn't celebrate. I couldn't do anything. I was hurting so much.
You can't explain. You really can't to people, like, what you're going through at that point. Even the only reason that stopped me from just sleeping at the post-fight conference was the adrenaline, right? You know what I mean? It's still going. And, oh, dude, you're shot. And you're shot for a couple of days after. You know what I mean? The body, it's just brutal. It's brutal on the body. People don't realize that. They just think it's two people fighting. But it's 36 minutes at a rate that no sport can compete with. You know what I mean? I'm sorry. Just don't. You're getting hit in your body. You're getting hit in the stomach. When you watch them on TV, it looks kind of fun and like it don't bother them, right? Like you see fighters pick punches off to the body with their elbows. That shit hurts, though, you know, when you're doing that. You're getting hit with heads. You're getting hit with elbows across the face and then the arm. You know, your hands, everything. It's just on and on. I could go all day long.
Boxing, Kelly, it's a lonely sport. When you win the title, is it kind of a mental, like, where can you go to next? I always remember when they interviewed Neil Armstrong once, he's like, I suffered a little depression afterwards because what can you do better than walk on the moon? You just achieved your dream of life, of winning the belt. Was it hard to mentally keep pushing yourself? Because you fought Jermaine. You won a few more times after that as a champ. Was it hard to keep motivating yourself?
No, not that. Well, so I am, and I this is – one thing about me, and I guess it's a good or bad thing, like once I put my mind to something, like I'm going to see it through, mm-hmm. right? No matter what it costs. Like even this charitable, I've been now for about 4 years, and I still haven't – I'm just actually getting ready to receive a grant, hopefully, next month. I'm funding all this on my own. Oof. You know what I mean? I'm doing – But and like my dad's like, dude, you're retired, like, and you're working, and nothing's. But I'm like, I don't want to say it, but I'm like knees deep in this now, right?
Yeah,
you know,
you're
what
fully
I mean?
Invested, like, yeah,
yeah. I'm gonna see through it, right? It's more of the vision I have for it than anything else. But I also like once I accomplish something, I'm kind of like, I did it, right? Mm-hmm. On to the next one, you know. A lot of people are not like that. A lot of people stayed at that one thing, which is why I think my career ended so early too. Like when I won the world title, I always said before I won the world title that I was going to retire early. I said, I promised my wife, she was happy. I promised my parents and myself that I wasn't going to be in that sport long. And I think I was actually a little longer than I wanted to be. When I won the world title, I was actually starting to count down to like my last fight, right? You know what I mean? I was already kind of preparing that part. That's where most fighters are looking for that next mm-hmm. big one. On the flip side of that, don't get me wrong, it wasn't like I didn't have the heart. You know what I mean? Like, no, I still had the heart for it and everything, but I was kind of I was finding my exit plan too at that point. And so that was me, you know what I mean? Like, but I took every fight because I'm from a small city. I had, you know, the pressure of carrying that Youngstown on the shoulders. I didn't want to let people down. I always say letting people down. That was another thing that probably got to me more so than anything. And so that's what got me through was all them fights that I had after, you know. And then it came to a point where I was just like, I'm done.
Yeah, because retiring at 30, it's hard to even fathom as an athlete. And you were, I think, 40-2 famously. One question I always want to ask you, because you fought Jermaine Taylor again, you won again, you had another title fight. Your first loss to the Executioner, when you lost to Bernard Hopkins, mentally, how do you deal with that? Like, you haven't probably lost a fight in 12, 15 years. How mentally do you, like, holy shit, I just lost. I'm not invincible. I'm not, you know, I'm not unstoppable. How do you deal with that mentally?
Well, I didn't because of the reason behind it. Now, I knew this was going to come in, it's always inevitable, but the Hopkins and Martinez fights. Look, when I fought Hopkins, and you'll be one now. I've been retired, you know, 13 years. When I fought Hopkins, I can't even say I was 80% that night. And this is all well documented too. Like, if I ever really wanted to go out and like dig into it and have everything pulled up, we could. Well, Thomas Hauser actually wrote about it, and Thomas Hauser was a straightforward, called Bluebird Blue writer. You know, there was no bias or anything when he wrote. The Hopkins fight, I didn't beat myself up over because I just knew. I knew what happened. Mm-hmm. I knew it wasn't me in that ring that night. And even if it was me, I'm not saying that I would have beat Hopkins. And I don't ever use fights as a measuring stick, right? Like, but you have to a certain point. Like, when Jermaine fought Hopkins, controversial or not, but I thought Jermaine won. Definitely the second fight or the first fight. But they were close, right? I go in and beat Jermaine Taylor the way I did, by knocking him out and by decision. Mm-hmm. And then to lose to Hopkins the way I did, though, like, I'm not saying I should have beat him, but it shouldn't have happened that way, right? I think anybody that watched me fight and knows boxing could tell that there was something a little off, right?
Something was definitely off.
Like, we know Hopkins is a legend. Mm-hmm. We know he's great. I'm not taking that away. Like, he's probably, in my opinion, the best middleweight of all time. And I know the nostalgia fans are going to be like, oh, no way. But if you see me fight and you see me fight that night, I think people would tell. But I really didn't. You know, a lot of people are like, oh, Hopkins ruined Pavlik's career, blah, blah, blah. It wasn't. You know, mm-hmm. it truly wasn't. Like, I knew why. I knew what happened and going into that fight. And it was just one of them things where I, you know, okay, so what? I always said, like, all right, I lost to a Hall of Famer. You know, what do you want me to do? So, but and I usually don't, because if I ever brought up, you know, everything that went on, I would, and I always kept my mouth shut on because I would have been bombarded like, oh, excuses, and oh my God, you know, just take the loss and shut up, dude. You know, and so, like, again, I always say, hey, I got beat by a Hall of Famer, man. Oh, wow. What, you know, fuck, what are you? You're going to talk shit? You know, like, I'm in there fighting them, right? So it is what it is.
But, we're so far, it was so many years ago. What, I mean, I want to know too. Like, what do you mean by that? Why were you only 80%? Because I believe you. I don't think it's an excuse thing. You're a straight shoot, I could tell, you know? Like, yeah. Why are you saying you were only 80%?
Well, you know, every fighter, you know, every night we're supposed to. Boxing is the one sport where a fighter is never 100% anyways, right? Yeah. A boxer is never performing at 100%.
Right.
Impossible. Unless they literally made weight easily and they ate and they kept the same diet and everything else and they had the rest period. What the body goes through after all the years of research and studying, at the caloric deficit that the body plus trying to make weight on top of that, there is no way even in 24 hours or 28 hours that your body's ever going to recoup or replenish what you lost and be 100% on a fight night.
Yeah.
In that sport. But I went into it, and where I say is documented, it's a small role too. Like, all right, Robert Garcia had Stephen Luevano, who was the co-main event on that card. And I ended up getting bronchitis real bad. And I got there Wednesday, and I had a 103 temp on Wednesday. And then by Thursday, we had to finally, like, have the doctor come in. Because everything's hush-hush. You try to keep it. You don't want the other camp finding out. You know, blah, 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 blah. So finally, the doctor came in, and they said that I had bronchitis. And so then we started getting a little panicky, and it was like, all right, what are we going to do? So we call in. The doctor was like, get a bronchitis, whatever this medication was. Well, it was the inhaler. So we were getting ready to use the inhaler, and I think it was Miguel Diaz, my cut man, who's been around boxing forever. He goes, oh, no, wait. He's like, you know, we better check with the commission because steroids and inhaler.
For the inhaler?
Yep.
Yeah, you could. Yeah, you could piss dirty for that. So then we had to get an oral medication and take that, which leaves you drowsy, you know, on and on. And then even in the locker room where I said Thomas Hauser, he wrote Thomas Hauser would cover the fights. And he would sit in the locker room, and Thomas Hauser would write, just sit there and write what he sees. You know, he wrote books for Muhammad Ali. Mm-hmm. He's a huge writer in boxing. And he was there for all of it, and he wrote it in a book, and I actually have the book at home. It's still never posted, right? The whole story of, like, my dad being nervous and frustrated, and then when I went into the stall and I was trying to cough up the mucus, and my dad got pissed because he was nervous, and then my temp was at, like, 101 in the locker room, you know, before the fight. And yeah, so there was just a lot. So when you're on that medication and you're running a fever for, you know, at that point, 3 days, you're not you, right? You're to go fight a Bernard Hopkins, 12 rounds. And I remember the first couple rounds, like Jack, I was just out there. I would see what he's doing. I knew what he was doing. And he's slick, taking nothing away, right? But I would go to make the move, but I just couldn't pull the trigger. You get what I'm saying? It's hard to explain. Like, I would go to try to make the step with him, but I just couldn't. And he didn't do anything crazy or different. And then I remember kept telling Jack, like, I'm going to warm up. Don't worry, because Jack was panicky in the corner. And then finally, after the fourth round, I just quit saying I was going to warm up. And then at that point, it was more so the ego. I just don't want to get stopped, right? Now, I'm not going to lie to you. By the eighth round, ninth round, I'm like, fucking stop this, you know, but I would never have said that, you know, but so I'm thinking, it was not me. It just, and again, I'm realistic. Would I have won if I was? Who knows? But I could definitely tell you it would have been a different fight, you know? So with that being said, and again, this is all documented shit. What I mean, documented, like, I'm sure you could pull up the files from that, you know, the commission still has to probably keep all of it. Mm-hmm. And again, Thomas Hauser, I'll use him because everybody that knows boxing knows that guy's a straight shooter. And it was written in a book, you know, published. So, that was, and the same with the, you know, listen, when I fought Martinez, a lot of people don't know what I went through for that one. But again, and it looks like the two losses I could honestly understand. the two losses, oh my God, you just take them and shut up. But it is what it is, you know, the weight issue. Like, I mean, if you watch the Martinez fight, you hear the commentators, which I'd never really ever heard, harp, at least for the whole round, I forget what round it was, about the stationary bike in my room, the treadmill in the room, you know, how much I like the weight cut for that fight. I mean, I literally didn't think I was going to make it out.
Oof.
You know, trying to make weight. And at that point, as I said, I was over a decade at 160 pounds. So, but these are all things that, you know, I still to this day, I feel like I would never do an interview with USA Today. I would never do an interview with Stephen A. Smith, bringing this up, because I would just set myself up for,
yeah, like, of course.
3 weeks of getting my ass torn apart. So, you know, it is what it is. So with Hopkins fight, going back to that, no, I didn't. I didn't. It didn't ruin me. It didn't hurt me. I knew exactly what happened, what was going on, and I still somewhat used it as a learning experience, because guess what? 8 years, I finally had a loss. How am I going to deal with that, right? That was kind of the
– yeah.
But it was a non-title fight, so I didn't lose my titles, right? I mean, we could have used the excuse that I was one of the first fighters really to kind of – maybe, I'm not sure, I have to go back – that jumped two weight classes. And then I came back down and defend my title against Rubio, who ended up going on to win a world title, mm-hmm. after I beat him, you know, and defend my title back at 160. You know, I didn't fight Hopkins at 168. So
Kelly, wrapping up your, like, amazing career, we joked around in the beginning about Will. Going into that fight with Will, did you know it was most likely going to be your last fight? Like, I think this might be it? Or, like, because, like,
can I kind of answer that, I think?
Yeah, of course.
I'm pretty sure that at that point in his career, and it was very – my manager's a straight shooter.
Yeah.
He was pretty much on a comeback tour. I think he was looking – there was a lot of talks of him fighting Ward. If I – Kelly could probably correct me if I'm wrong. And this was like his – me, I think he fought the guy Jocko, the kid Scott Sigmund, whatever. Yep. So this was like his comeback tour, and almost like as a warm. And I knew that. I was a warm-up fight for bigger things.
Mm-hmm.
That's why, like, I wore the shirt Who's Will Rosinski, because nobody knew who I was. I was mm-hmm. fighting Kelly Pavlik. No, I was like a local like New York club fighter kind of guy. I mean, I was on a national scene as an amateur, but, you know, I wasn't Olympian nothing, but I think this was his comeback tour, and my goal was just to try to ruin that, because in my mind,
oh, wow.
Thanks, Will.
If I come back, if I come back out of nowhere and I beat a Kelly Pavlik, you know, it's like people would be like, whoa, who is this kid Will Rosinski? That's the question everyone would be asking, and then it would have got me a big fight, you know, a big money fight.
Absolutely, and it was. It was the Will's 100% correct. It was a comeback tour. For me, it was frustrating, you know, with the three fights and at that point not having any title or anything lined up either. And so kind of going to like the retirement and why I retired. So I'm not going to lie to you. When they announced that, when Top Rank gave me an ultimatum and before I went to Garcia. See, what people don't realize, when I turned pro, Top Rank wanted me gone from my trainer. They didn't want him there. Even before I had my first fight, when I signed the contract, then like 2 years in, they sent me out there to go train with Pat Barry. And it was supposed to be Kenny Adams, but I was with Pat Barry, and they didn't send Jack. But I bitched and moaned and fought for Jack to come out there, because I knew that I didn't want to leave home to go train, right? I'm a homebody. So then year five, so this will be the third time, they sent me to the Castillo Corrales fight. And I bitched and moaned. I didn't even want to go to that fight. And thank God I did, because it was probably one of the best fights I've ever seen. And they didn't send Jack because they wanted to renew the contract and they wanted me gone from Jack. So like four times throughout my career, I fought and put my foot down and kept Jack as my trainer. Well, after the Lopez fight, they were, it was an ultimatum. Like, we either freeze you or you go to and train with Robert Garcia. I didn't want to. Usually when you up and leave your home, you know, is at the beginning of your career when you're coming up, when you ain't made the money, when you don't have a world title nor a name, you know, very rarely does somebody with three world title belts in their trophy case and a couple of mil go and leave their home and their family.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So I was pissed about that. But when I got out to Oxnard, it was great, dude. I mean, I loved it. Robert Garcia, I see why he's the best trainer in boxing, why his stable is the way it is. They, you know, I made great friends out there. And that was all well and good. But I was still away from the family. I was still away from home. It started sucking even a little bit more out of me, right? You know, just that drive, the fire wasn't there as much anymore. So then I got past, you know, Jake, and I'm like, okay, cool. And I look sharp. And then I fought Sigmund because he was talking shit just to get to fight. And like, it was ESPN. Cool. The fight with Will. Great. But, and nothing against Will. I watched Will. Will's a sharp boxer, you know, like good moves, good hand speed, you know, and had everything in the game, you know, in that fight. So I knew it was going to be, you know, that he was coming to fight. And then I beat Will. And now I'm like, dude, this has been 8 months now that I've been away from home. My kids are young. Like, and there is no talks of a title fight. Or not even a meaningful fight, right? So now, like, I'm already just not contemplating, I guess, but like, when am I going to announce retirement?
Wow.
Okay. And then then Cameron calls me and starts talking about Andre Ward. And then like 3 days later, it was like, this fight's real, dude. Getting the contract. Like, we're going to get the contract. It's going to sign. Now I'm rejuvenated. Now I'm like, dude, this is it, man. Like, not saying that, and I'll be dead honest with you. At that point, being like not in a big fight, this, that, for a couple years, like, I'm like, probably not going to win, right? Like, but I'm going to go train like I did against, like, it's the Taylor fight, okay? I mean, this is going to be real shit. And I was just kind of waiting for that paper to come, and then that's when Andre Ward had the shoulder injury.
Yeah.
And had to get the surgery. And at that point, there was no meaningful fight out there. No, like, nothing. The Super 6 was going on, and I that was the icing on a cake. Like, I was like, I'm done. I mean, and in that sport, if your heart's not fully there, it's not worth doing. You get hurt.
Kelly,
and I was content. I really was.
Well, that's actually my final question. If you were content with your decision, obviously you were. All right, I kept you on the phone for an hour. We're going to finish up with some quick hit questions. Kelly, I'll hit you first, and Will, you answer right after him, okay?
All right.
Here we go. Kelly, you and I are at a bar here in New York City. Who's the coolest person in your phone that if you texted them, they would text you back?
Two people, and they're actually friends. Dave Delzio or Chris Santos, Chef Santos from Chop.
Santos is a really good answer. Okay. Will?
I got nothing, bro.
Well, you have Kelly Pavlik and you won't text him.
He probably won't text you back.
Yeah, I would.
All right, here we go. Kelly, last show you binged watched.
Ah, dude, it's going to be corny. I wish I could say something cool like Game of Thrones, but I think it was either Cobra Kai or Outlander.
Oh, those aren't bad shows. I watched Ginny and Georgia. Okay, Will, what about you?
I'm not good at these questions, bro.
All right, well, you're passing on that one, too?
I don't watch TV. I have too many kids to watch TV.
All right, here we go.
No, I don't have time, but my Sundays are to binge watch.
That's true. You're doing
more work than binge watch. That's what I missed.
All right, here we go. Both of you guys, and Will, think about this one. One either boxing match or sporting event in history you can watch front row. It's like Kelly Pavlik, Will Rosinski. Here's a ticket to any sporting event in history. Front row, what are you guys going to watch? Kelly?
All right, this is as hard for me because this is me bragging a little bit, all right? So one highlight that I probably would say is even bigger than the world title was I got to speak to the Ohio State Buckeyes the night before Michigan game. And with the biggest rivalries in,
of course,
in sports history.
The game, that's a flex. So okay,
it's kind of hard for me to kind of like on that one because – I got to be on the sideline and watch it as well. But I would probably, at that point, I'm a big college fan. I would probably say be able to watch the Buckeyes in the Rose Bowl in the first row.
Okay, that's actually a good answer. Will?
I'm going to say Gaddy Ward, 1, 2, or 3.
Okay, so Will, you answered the question. I'm very excited. First time you've ever asked one. Both you guys, Kelly, it's probably going to be the belts, but how about this? Coolest piece of memorabilia that you own?
Yeah, I'm just gonna. There's so many. I'm probably gonna say the belts though, because that's without the belts, I wouldn't have owned anything else, right?
And where are they displayed, Kelly? Where are the belts now? Are they in the gym? They're in your house?
No, I got them. I put those away. They're not even my, those are no, my belts no more. Those are my kids. And I'll put, my kids will probably be the last people that really cherish them. And, you know, then it'll be my grandkids. By the time it leaves my grandkids' hands, who knows? So I put the, those are all put away, a nice little trophy case. You know, I set them aside. So,
Will?
Yep.
I know it's going to sound corny because we're on the line with them, but the picture of me punching Kelly Pavlik in the face with the signed glove under it that he signed for me.
Oh, shit. That's a real good answer, though.
Because my kids always say, because my kids are young. They're 4, 5, 7, and 8. Oh, they always ask me why he has so much snot coming out of his nose in that picture.
I have sinuses.
All right. Last two. Here we go. Kelly, last person you asked to take a picture with. People always ask you to take a picture. Who's the last dude you saw? You're like, oh, shit, I need a picture with him.
Oh, man, it was funny, actually, at the Atlantic City Boxing Hall of Fame. And he was cool as fuck, and he knew me before I could even ask him, and I thought that was cool. But remember the guy, remember the movie Bronxville?
Of course, yeah.
A Bronx Tale?
Of course.
Yeah, see, Collosional? Yeah, him. I went up to have fanboyed a little bit, and I went up and, I asked him, you know, for a picture, and I would say that's probably the last one.
That's a good answer. How about you? Well, who's the last dude you asked to take a picture with?
Roberto Duran at the ringside at Canelo versus Jacobs.
Oh, that's a good answer.
Nice.
And here we go. Last one. What do you miss the most about boxing? Whether it's the celebrity, the cheering, this and that, the way you look, everything, the money. What do you miss the most, Kelly, about fighting?
I would say the adrenaline rush, or I guess you could call it that, and the after the victory, you know, the bittersweet, I guess. I don't know. The feeling, I know it sounds crazy, but like of being like beat up, sore, you know, touching your face easy because everything hurts, but knowing you just won. And you know what I'm saying? Like, it's hard to explain.
I don't think he would know. I think most fighters would understand that. And I wasn't even at your level world title fights, but I get it.
And the same thing, Will, that's what you miss?
Yeah. It's that feeling of,
yeah, I would say with boxing, I would say just being in great shape. I mean, now I fight the urge to eat and I lose probably every.
You just ran a marathon, Will.
No, that was like 2 years ago.
Bro, I sit in two gyms all day long and I'm fucking 225 pounds. I get it. And I like eating. And everybody goes, you want me to come back? I'm like, yeah, to the buffet line at the Chinese restaurant.
Hey, last question. I actually don't even know the answer, either of you guys, if you're still a fan of the game. And it's always weird, me being such a sports fan, when I have on, like, Mariano Rivera came on, and he's like, hey, before we go, don't ask a lot of questions about the current Yankees. I really don't watch it anymore. So I don't know if you guys really watch it now. Are you guys still a fan of the sport? Is it must watch? Or if it's on, you'll watch it?
You know, this is another one. We go on this rabbit hole. You would need another three more shows with me on it, because I'll just go all day. But, yeah, it's but a lot of people knock it. You know, it's nostalgia wins all the time. Everything always resorts back to, even like Usyk this weekend, what he's done and accomplished. But of course, he's compared to the 90s, 80s, 70s. Listen, athletes evolved. I'm in it. I'm strength conditioning. I'm up to date with everything. Boxing, football, basketball, athletes have evolved. And boxing is still great. Like, there's still so much talent and boxing right now, but because certain people don't watch it as much, mm-hmm. they're like, oh, it's dead. It's a dying sport. Yeah, I'm still up with it. I still think it's great. I'm excited for a lot of the fights that are possible matchups, and I just think the talent level right now in boxing is unmatched out of any era and decade, and I'm sorry. We could go down that, and I could pinpoint and put out there why it is.
That's a great answer. Will, you still a fan of it or no?
Yeah, I watch it. I watch it a lot. I watch the little BS, like Broadway boxing, you know, like that's on the worst film. I like all the club show stuff. I like everything. I like the guys coming up. A lot of the guys coming up too, like the kid Berlanger. I knew I was in the gym with Berlanger when he was you know, like 8 years old. So even him, like, it's relevant for me because I watched him grow up from a little kid. So I'm definitely still into it. Of course, the bigger fights, I definitely mark my calendar and stuff. But
so let me just get – I hate doing the predictions because it's silly. Canelo Crawford, just prediction on either of you guys. Kelly, prediction?
It's going to be a little closer than people think, but I just have to go with Canelo on the size. You know, he's used to fighting guys coming down from 200. Mm-hmm. And Crawford, I know Crawford is big, but it's still a difference when you're used to fighting at a certain weight class. So I got to lean with Canelo on this one.
And Will?
I'm going to go with Crawford.
Yeah, I love Bud Crawford.
Because I do think he's bigger than people think, people realize. And also, if you tell me Canelo 5-6 years ago, I would say probably Canelo. But I feel like he's really, I don't want to say fall off because the guy is so talented. And say fall off is not right. But I just think he's not the same fighter he was a bunch of years ago because age does that to you. And I don't know. I feel like, too, you know, he's avoided some fights and maybe he's more in it for the money. I mean, the guy's making ridiculous money. So I don't know. I'm going to go with Crawford. I think he's just a hungry guy right now.
I hope so. Kelly, plug everything, the Instagram, and plug if anyone can help out, your charities, your gym, everything. Plug everything you got.
Yeah. Well, Pavlik.Kelly on Instagram is one of the things I'm slacking on that. Just hard to find the time to get to it. Kelly Pavlik, the Ghost on Facebook. Kelly Pavlik, charitableorganization.org. is the website to my charitable organization, and there is a donation thing on a button on there. Click, and yeah, that's what I kind of got going right now. So,
Will, you want to busy? You want to plug anything? Will, your Instagram or anything?
I got no plugs. I'm a fat fireman.
Kelly, this was so much fun. Thank you. You gave me so much of your time, and let's definitely link up, bro.
All right, Will. Great talking with you, bro.
And, same here.
I'll try to stay in touch with you. If I get out there, I'll let you know. Where are you at? Are you still around that way too?
I'm in Long Island. I'm not far. I'm pretty okay. Close. I'm 30-minute train ride.
All right, man. Yeah, I'll head out that way. I'll hit you guys up. So
nice. And with that Kelly Pavlik money, you take us out to dinner, so we'll be good.
Oh, shit. Okay.
I'll see you guys later, bro. Be good, guys. All right. Thanks, Jim. All right.
We'll see you.
Will, thank you, bro.
Later.
Bye-bye.